the 210 to 208 vote that saved Speaker Johnson's procedural agenda on Tuesday is one of those congressional moments that reveals more about coalition dynamics than most people realize. Jared Golden of Maine and Marie Glusenkamp Perez of Washington, both Democrats representing districts that Trump won in 2024, voted with Republicans on a procedural question, blindsiding Democratic leadership who expected to hold their caucus together. Johnson's margin was that thin.
Procedural votes are often where real power is exercised in the House because they set the rules for what comes to the floor and how it gets amended. By crossing on the procedural vote, Golden and Glusenkamp Perez weren't just breaking with their caucus on a symbolic issue, they were enabling a legislative agenda they've calculated their constituents are more sympathetic to than Nancy Pelosi's base might prefer. It's district-first politics, and it's a rational calculation for members who won in Trump country.
Democratic leadership's reaction was described as surprise bordering on fury. The problem for leadership is that they have very few cards to play against members from those districts. You can't threaten to primary Golden and Glusenkamp Perez from the left in constituencies where the left isn't the winning coalition. They are in the caucus because their presence is mathematically necessary, and they know it.
Which brings us to the masculinity messaging story, because it's directly connected to this same geographic and demographic challenge. Democratic strategists looking at the 2024 results and modeling for the 2026 midterms have identified a significant gender gap in their coalition, specifically the collapse of support among non-college-educated men and even some erosion among younger men. The response apparently is a deliberate reframing of Democratic policy positions around themes of strength, self-reliance, and what strategists are calling working-class masculinity.
I'd want to know more about what that actually looks like in practice before drawing too many conclusions. Masculinity messaging can mean anything from featuring candidates in outdoor settings to rethinking how Democrats talk about trade and manufacturing to a more substantive policy pivot on issues like apprenticeships and vocational training. The strategic logic is real, the demographic problem is real, but the execution matters enormously.
There's also a risk of inauthenticity that opposition research will exploit. If the messaging isn't connected to genuine policy positions, it reads as costume rather than conviction, and that's a vulnerability. The Golden and Glusenkamp Perez story, interestingly, is actually an example of what authentic cross-aisle credibility can look like. Two members who vote their district even at the cost of party discipline. Whether broader Democrats can replicate that without the ideological authenticity is the open question.
The midterm environment is still 14 months out, which in political terms is an eternity. But the early positioning on masculinity, on bipartisan dealmaking, on court structure, tells you that both parties are already gaming the field.